The numbers told the story. They always do.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, Visa.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. See, hour number two, Jeff, by the way, it's Gil Alexander, Jeff Parlay. Hour number two, I correctly go through all of our, do we call them affiliates? Ways you can access VSiN. Hour number one, when I'm starting the show, I just go into autopilot and I include ones that are no longer with us. I got to work on that. By the way, you see Richard Jefferson officiated a quarter yesterday in Summer League. I didn't see how it went, but he said it was a fantastic experience. That, and I think he's right, that will make him a better analyst. He said he's always had respect for officials. He went through like 10 hours of training, he was saying, for this. But he went through like multiple hours of training for 10 minutes of officiating just to get that perspective. Good on him for doing that, by the way. Good on him. You ever had a desire to ref a basketball game?
No. No.
Quick answer to a really stupid question.
No, the only yes. I've reffed in my life when in high school, I was a counselor at a basketball camp, and when you're one of the junior counselors, one of your jobs is to ref the games.
Yeah.
So I reffed a few of those. It's
someone get in your face?
Oh, no one got too angry. No one got too angry.
we get tweets. Speaking of angry, we get tweets from the angriest guy in New Jersey. The sports are aggressing defensively, you think. How about in every way, play the second baseman behind the bag and throw sliders away? Can't make it up. It's Web 12-66. Also got this from Sean Villa PA, or Sean Villa PA. Oh, he's talking about my betting pentathlon pick. I'm fading Jason Alexander. And he said, Jason Alexander, George, what if today, Gil, is the day to do the opposite, though? If every instinct I have is wrong, then the opposite must be right. It's a very good point. What if Jason Alexander, the pitcher, decides to do everything differently today? And we get screwed. Anyway, one of our two plays today in the betting pentathlon. The favorite that we're playing, we have to play a favorite and an underdog today. The favorite we're playing would be the Minnesota Twins, first five, against the Jason Alexander Milwaukee Brewers. Jason Alexander being on the hill. Mark Borchardt is with us. Mark is doing double duty with us today. He's doing the Q2 derivative podcast. We did the Q2 show last year on the radio side last week, but we're doing the podcast form. So it's kind of like right before the 81 game mark for most teams. Now it's right after it for everybody. But he joins us once again, as he does each and every Tuesday, from an undisclosed location in the desert. So undisclosed today that we're not even showing video. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing good. Yeah, Skype isn't putting the video out, but I did get a chance to listen to your fade of Jason Alexander, and yeah. I totally agree with you. Sabermetric numbers are terrible. 5.79 xERA on my chart, that's actually one of my plays. I have,
and we did not speak about this beforehand. Let's let everybody know we did not speak about this. Yeah,
yeah. I'm gonna go ahead and parlay that game with the Yankees. I got it at minus 280, but it's gone up to like minus 305. I'm still going to make the parlay. If you parlay Yankees Twins, it's plus 128. Cole versus Graham Ashcraft. And I just got to say, Graham Ashcraft sounds kind of like a rock band in the 70s, you know, like
Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, and Ashcraft. That kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or Jefferson Ashcraft.
Right. Exactly. So you're parlaying the Twins with the Yankees. What's the payout on that?
It's a plus 128 payout. So
all right.
I'm glad. Yeah, Jason Alexander, much better actor in Seinfeld than a pitcher in Major League Baseball.
Boy, his Fangraphs page is a disaster. It is a complete disaster. When I was going through this last night, I was like, oh my God, what is this? Now, can we lose? Sure we can. It's baseball, for God's sakes. But at least that is the... So I don't know if you heard about this. We're doing a Major League Baseball betting pentathlon here this week at the network. So five plays over 4 days, Mark, to determine who is the greatest baseball bettor who has ever walked to the face of the earth. I think that's the prize.
Large sample size. Oh, I think it's a great idea. It's a fun idea.
So by the way, Jason Weingarten texted me the other day. He's like, can I get in on this? I was like, listen, there's a no savant rule. We can't have savants in this contest. So yesterday was a total. I was just joking earlier. Not even joking. I'm being serious. It's like how I won the Giants under, I have no idea whatsoever, but somehow it got there. Should have won it. Should have lost it. I have no idea how we won. Today is a favorite and an underdog. I have not chosen my underdog yet. But my favorite is the first five on the Minnesota Twins. That's how I played that one today. So I don't have an underdog yet. Tomorrow will be a run line play, and then Thursday will be a prop play. So those are the rules. Them's the rules, Mark Borchard.
It's an interesting. So you have to today. You have to do a favorite and an underdog.
Correct. Today's the big day. Today's the big day. So there's some strategy involved, right? With the underdog, there's some strategy involved because particularly if you're down a game, which a little less than half of the participants are down a game after obviously one total yesterday. So they're really incentivized to play the bigger dogs, quite frankly.
They could just be like, well, maybe it's the day that the Reds are going to beat the Yankees.
I was going to say, Graham Ashcraft might be their guy today.
Graham Ashcraft's going to fly.
Yeah.
So.
He's going to fly. So did you have any other picks today?
I do. You know, I have another parlay. It's a favorite laden card, in my opinion. But I have the Giants going to the Braves. You know, I love Spencer Strider. I think this guy's amazing. He's like number two on the base winner ERA chart right now. So it's going to go Giants to Braves plus 120. That plays plus 128, too.
Yeah, Logan Webb going for the Giants at home. I like the Giants too in that game for sure.
How can you play Dallas Keuchel? I mean, how can you even if you're chasing in a contest like I would go away from that one.
Well, so it's interesting. Again, you and I have not talked about this slate. We never talk about any slate, but you're corroborating some of my instincts on it. So I don't have my dog play yet because of what you just mentioned there, which is it does feel very favorite heavy up and down the card today. And what I mean by favorite heavy is not that there's lots of favorites. There's always favorites, clearly. But that I really am finding difficulty justifying going against most of them. There's a couple spots where I think there's an opportunity, but it's not like I'm racing to bet the Reds or the D-backs, to your point. The chasm between the haves and the have-nots, boy, it takes a lot of onions to bet on some of these guys.
It really does. I want to hear the guy who handicaps play Dallas Keuchel. I'm not being a smartass. I would really like to hear that because maybe there's some validity to taking the Diamondbacks plus 205.
Well, right. There's always a price, right? Value is value. So if the price gets to a certain point, as you very well know, then it's a play. But like Dallas Keuchel is one of these. You and I have been doing this for longer than we care to remember. And Dallas Keuchel's another one of the, you know, example of another one of these guys that we come across, any baseball fan or baseball bettor does, which is at one point borderline elite, if not elite, right? There was a few years there where Dallas Keuchel in Houston, elite ground ball, and we talked about this a little bit last week, you know, 60% ground ball rate, which was always saving him. Now that it's just, right, in quotes, now that it's only 50%, It doesn't erase some of the other foibles of his game, but he's just a long line of guys that was once great. And it's just, we forget about, for all the greats that end up in the Hall of Fame, there are so many, right, where they have their years and then they just fall off a cliff.
I think your favorite might have been Derek Lowe, because that's when a team would they would keep a guy longer. Now if they get rid of him, the White Sox said, hey, bye, Keuchel, you're gone. And I think in years past they would have kept him. But I remember you winning money with Derek Lowe. You were just playing him every time and when he was on his way out.
That's such a good memory. But you know what? I think if someone asked me, like, what over the years has been – like the staples of baseball betting that have probably been the most successful. I would add, I would probably respond by saying, recognizing the great ones before everybody else does. So like, there was a whole summer where Jacob deGrom was just cash money before like the rest of the world kind of knew him. The other flip side to that is sort of what we were just talking about, which is the ones who were great at the ends of their career just becoming so awful, but their reputation keeps their teams rolling them out there. Not only their teams that they were great with, but others like Felix at the end, Tim Lincecum at the end. Oh my God. Do you remember fading him? Like it was just like, oh, this guy is so bad now. So there's that. So I think those That's the thing. Like, we can crunch numbers all we want, but in the end, like, what are the most successful things baseball wise? Those two things, like almost the most directly simple things.
You can't forget about the sabermetric all-star, either fading the non-all-star or playing on the guy who is going to have positive regression. I would like to see you do the sabermetric all-stars again.
Yes, that was a great podcast we used to do. That was a mid-season, right? Just it was like right around the time of the actual Midsummer Classic. We would go through our starting rotation of the four pitchers who were either the most overperforming or underperforming of the whole season.
We'd each pick one. And the guy who picked first usually picked the other guys, you know?
Oh, man. Those were some days of yore. So are those your only two plays, the two parlays, or is anyone else here on the way out?
I'm trying to help you with a dog. Maybe
don't
wash.
Help. No, you don't have to help me. Okay. I just want to know what your number is. Yeah.
I mean, I do have the Rockies plus 1.5 against the Padres. That's another play that I have. And outside of that, that's pretty much it, Gil.
Yeah, the run line strategy at Coors is always a very good one. I will give you that. That is such a boy, that Rockies team frustrates though, doesn't it? Year after year.
Well, they're so much better at home though, so it's almost like I think if you just played them at home and played against them on the road, you'd be in good shape.
All right, Rockies run line for Mr. Borchardt. Mark, I'll talk to you in about 2 hours. How about that?
Sounds good, Gil. Thanks.
All right, Q2 derivatives on the podcast side, on the Beating the Book podcast side, where again we'll go through most profitable teams, pitchers, and then we'll narrow it down more proprietary, 5 innings, first innings, that kind of thing on the podcast side. Still to come, Dave Tindall on the Open Championship, some NFL props on the other side. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The VSiN Summer Special is here. For only $19, you get everything VSiN has to offer from now to the end of July. Sign up today and you'll get VSiN's daily best bets, including Adam Burke's daily MLB best bets, NFL preseason coverage, premium articles on golf, UFC, USFL, and NASCAR. If you want the full VSiN experience, which features a daily best bets email, every edition of Point Spread Weekly, use of our betting tools, and a live video stream whenever you want it, the cost is only $19 to be a subscriber through July 31st. Sign up now at VSiN.com/summer. Skill Alexander, Jeff Parlay's here as well. Thanks to Sean Higgs, one of our loyal listeners, who not only our loyal listeners, but VSiN's loyal listeners, who popped in here to provide us with some food. Jeff, is that food that you have put your grubby hands on again?
I haven't touched it yet. That'll be up to our audio guy, Jeff Jens.
Ladies and gentlemen,
let me do everything here.
I have a discussion with you without Jeff Parles present.
Oh, that's
whenever we get food here, Jeff puts his grubby paws in it before anybody else gets a chance to. It is very. I'm sorry. Hey. Oh, hey, Jeff. How you doing, man?
Hey, we just sent Jeff Jens over to
Jeff Jens
to take a look. Matt Santos, I think, is going to bring some food down for the crew downstairs. We'll be in great shape here.
Please get the crew some food, my God. All right, so we turn it over to Jeff Parlay here because it's our never-ending summer of, and by the way, thank God for the NFL that we have these available. But this is, what are you serving up next that we haven't seen yet? What do you got here?
All right, so we'll go a little more generic here in this segment, Gil. A little more generic. We'll just go with the Offensive Player of the Year.
Okay.
Here. And, you know, this has always been kind of the let's give it to a non-quarterback award, but we have seen in the past, at least in the recent past, where there's been a little more of a movement towards giving it to the second best quarterback every once in a while, Gil. So this has turned into a more complicated award than it has in the past. Of course, last year, Jonathan Taylor winning that award.
So this is given by the AP, correct? Is that
yes,
what offensive player?
That is correct. Yes.
All right. So Jonathan Taylor 10-1, Debo 10-1, Cooper Kupp 12-1. So Taylor beat Kupp with this last year. Taylor got offensive player of the year. Cooper Kupp 12-1, Derrick Henry 14-1, Josh Allen 18-1. He and Justin Herbert, the only two quarterbacks up here. Devontae 18-1, Justin Jefferson and Justin Herbert both at 20-1. So, Well, let's go with you first. What are you thinking?
Also, I misspoke. Of course, Cooper Kupp won the AP.
That was an
error by me. Derrick Henry, of course, won in 2020. But this is a tough one here, because if you look at these odds, Davante Adams, I like a little more than 18-1. But if the Raiders make the playoffs again, Adams has a ginormous year. Wouldn't he make a lot of sense here, Gil? But I think I'd like more than 18-1. I think I'd like about 25-1 on Davante Adams.
So the thing with this award is, because you were talking about how, you know, sometimes they do give this to quarterbacks. Quarterbacks who are not the MVP, basically. Or quarterbacks that sometimes are the MVP. But the main thing about this award, which has been given out since 1972, the AP Offensive Player of the Year. And in 1972, the great Larry Brown, the Washington football team, he won it. Followed by the juice, O.J. Simpson, it should be noted, in 1973. But the point that I want to get to historically, if this is any indicator, is that a wide receiver before 2019, when Michael Thomas won this in 2019, as you just mentioned, Cooper Kupp last year in 2021, before those two guys won it, the last wide receiver to get this award was Jerry Rice back in 1993 and Jerry Rice back in 1987. Those are the only two times that a wide receiver had won this award before two of the last 3 years. So does that mean, let's just start there. Does that mean that we can just scrap the no wide receiver thing now? Now it's no longer a thing.
The new era now.
They don't, yes, because the game has changed. So because when we used to do this award, it's like a wide receiver is not winning it. Unless your name is Jerry Rice, you're not winning this. So that's done. Michael Thomas won it. And then 2 years later, Cooper Kupp won it. Isn't this just kind of the... I think Jonathan Taylor, quite frankly, is appropriately priced as the short shot because he didn't win it last year. Remember, it was a 50-50 Cooper Kupp, Jonathan Taylor proposition. And a running back is unlikely to win the league MVP. So Jonathan Taylor at 10-1 makes all the sense in the world, assuming all his touches last year didn't just make him a shot player. He's still too young for that. Running backs do fall off a cliff at some point. Let's just point that out. But I think that's too early for Jonathan Taylor. So I think he's appropriately priced at 10-1. You're saying who's your play here?
I think it's Davante Adams.
Just in case. Yeah.
I think that's the play for at least on my end.
I don't hate that.
You know, just looking at guys that are further down the board, man, I wish Christian McCaffrey could stay healthy, Gil.
Yeah.
I really do, because if he could stay healthy, I'm not sure how good or bad Baker truly is at this point, but I know he's better than Darnold is at this point. 25-1 on McCaffrey if he stays healthy. You know he would put up numbers. You just can't bet on a guy who just doesn't stay healthy like McCaffrey, who has been just destroyed by injuries over the last few years. That's the guy, if we knew he had a clean bill of health, 25-1 would be a really great number on him.
Every winner of this award has been either a running back or a quarterback, with the exception of Jerry Rice, Michael Thomas, and Cooper Kupp. And now I think, I'm just sort of reading it's exactly what we're just saying. Players have often been awarded this Offensive Player of the Year after near record-breaking or record-breaking performances. Again, Jonathan Taylor flirting with 2,000 yards? I don't know. It's tough. I hear you on Davante Adams. Let's put it this way. It's not a market I think I would bet.
It's difficult. The other interesting one, remember last year, though, Gil,
mm-hmm.
there were plenty of opportunities to get in during the season
yes.
in this award.
Oh, great and
that's
point.
And that's the case with every single one of these awards,
yep.
where if there's something you think is really mispriced, go mid-season. The one that always stands out to me was the Kyler Murray, Josh Jacobs year, where Josh Jacobs was the favorite going into December at almost every book. And it was like, well, okay, if Kyler Murray has a great month of December, which he did that rookie year, he's going to win this award. So
no, it's a good public service announcement, which is you don't get extra points, you don't get sexy points for doing it early.
Right.
The very first prediction ever made on this network, we were doing the Super Bowl The Atlanta-New England Super Bowl, the famous 28-3 game. The only Super Bowl where you remember a mid-game score more than you do the final score. So 28-3, and of course the Patriots famously coming back and covering, it should be pointed out. But after that game, Brent, the great Brent Musburger, asked me, what do you think the best bet is for the Super Bowl next year? And I said, Philadelphia, 30-1. And it ends up hitting, but the point is you could have gotten 30-1 well into that season. Well into that season. I think even before the postseason. I might be wrong about that.
It wasn't that steep, but it was pretty steep
pretty
for
close.
A one seed.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's like, hey, great, you did it early, but, you know, at that point you have so much, I mean, way less information than you do, obviously, deep into a season. What do you got here? NFL Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, just the two of the more generic awards that we haven't actually talked about in the last 2 weeks here. Myles Garrett, T.J. Watt, your co-favorites. No shock there with Aaron Donald right on their trails at plus 750 on Donald, 7-1 on Garrett and Watt. Micah Parsons off his absurd year last year.
Absurd.
10-1. The Bosa brothers clocking in next, 15-1 on Nick, 20-1 on Joey. And then Chase Young's also at 20-1. And then look at our old friend Khalil Mack, who we've not heard a lot from over the last year, plus a 28-1.
The return of the Mac, one might even say.
Yeah, one might say that.
One would be corny for saying that, but one might be saying that. Okay, Jeff, I got a giggle out of Jeff in the corner. That's all. My work is done here.
You got Santos, too.
And Santos?
You got them both.
That's great. Okay, so the list of these awards, again, the Associated Press NFL Defensive Player of the Year. This was first issued in 1971, so a couple of years before, 1 year before the offense. That's weird, right? That they gave this award out 1 year before they gave it offense. T.J. Watt won it last year. Aaron Donald the year before. Aaron Donald has won this three times. J.J. Watt has won this three times. So the notion of back-to-backs is actually, in recent history, fairly common. J.J. in 2014 and 2015, Aaron Donald in 2017 and 2018, Khalil Mack in between those two guys. And now T.J. Watt's going for the back-to-back. Aaron Donald won a subsequent one to that. Anyway, when was the last time a corner? How often does someone in the secondary win? That's really the question. Since the year 2011, one human being in a secondary has won this. Stephon Gilmore in 2019. And as we're looking up and down this line, there isn't one. So there you go.
Derwin James is the shortest secondary guy at 35-1.
Yeah, that's reflected in reflected historically. Oh man, my instinct wants to go Micah, but I wouldn't bet it now. You, if you had to make one bet right now, what would you do?
I'd go down the board, and I know it's hard for a tackling linebacker to win it, but Darius Leonard 35-1 feels pretty nice.
I like Darius Leonard. Yeah, it's my guy. 35-1, tough market. And again, same thing applies, right? Don't bet it now. Wait a few games, get some information, but always fun to talk about those courtesy of DraftKings. Coming back, Dave Tindall on the Open Championship next.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. Don't forget about Summer League, speaking of BetMGM sponsored events. And we'll be down there with The Edge, Jonathan Montoble, Matt Eumanns, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, each and every day during the NBA Summer League, each and every weekday, that is, through July 17th. We'll also have special guests, exclusive content, live updates all throughout VSiN shows. For more, follow us at VSiN Live on Twitter and VSiN Live on YouTube. I think I'm headed down there again today for the Warriors. Can't wait. Looking forward to NBA Summer League, a star-studded affair. Jeff Parlay, he'll be hobnobbing at the win. He knows what he's doing. I'm sure he'll do that. Ladies and gentlemen, always a pleasure to have this gentleman on with us before each and every major, whenever he's able to come on. You can see his great work at Betfair, among other places. It's Dave Tindall. Follow him at Dave Tindall Golf. How you doing, Dave? Good afternoon, sir.
Hello. Yes, I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Before we get into your trends piece about the Open Championship, which we're all looking forward to, you have a whole bunch of criteria, and you try to narrow it down to the golfer that fits the bill on most of those. I want to just go through some tweets that you put out this morning on our side, probably midday where you are. This is from your Twitter, Dave Tindall Golf. Thoughts after reading Rory's quotes this morning. You said, this might play, talking about the course here at St. Andrews, this might play like Hoylake in 2006, firm, fast. Tiger laid back off the tee and relied on his brilliant iron play. Who's most like the Tiger of 06? Morikawa, top five in strokes gained approach this season. Zalatoris, Henley, Hideki, Morikawa, Smith. So you're really reading into those comments from Rory as sort of a helpful hint.
I think so. And just before Rory, there was Padraig Harrington as well, kind of saying it's so firm and fast that I think the idea with St. Andrews, a lot of people are saying people can fly the bunkers, but Harrington was saying if you fly them, then you run into the next bunch of trouble. Yep. So you've kind of, the safest thing is to maybe pull up before those bunkers and then rely on your long iron play. And I just recall Rory doing that at Hoylake in 2006 when we had a very, very hot British summer, a pretty rare thing to be honest, but it's very hot here at the moment. And the course, if you've seen the pictures of the course, it's very baked out, very browned out. So if it continues this way, I just thought maybe we're kind of looking at this wrong. When it's not just a case of blasting it away and, you know, the longest hitters will win. Maybe it's the cleverest guys who win, who could take maybe two iron off the tee, even less, and then just hit those irons into the green. Because I think Rory was saying it's easier to play a full shot in than nurdle something around 60 yards. So, yeah, I don't know, it changed my thinking, but I just thought it was an interesting little twist.
I think you're right. It is an interesting little twist, and we know that it's warm there from having watched Wimbledon for a fortnight. Here are the other two quotes that Rory continues. It's sort of hit driver everywhere in Dunhill. Get it as close to the greens as you can and take your chances from there. I think this week you're going to maybe see guys laying back a little bit, giving yourself full shots into some of these greens, playing the angles. And here's the quote. I believe we have the Harrington one, because this is the one that I think is the perhaps the money shot on this from Patrick Harrington. Interesting, you said the ball. This is from Harrington. Interesting from Harrington. Quote: the ball is running so far, every tee shot is running 60 to 80 yards. You can't carry trouble and stay short of the next trouble. If you're getting too much shape, it's going to run into trouble. Being as fast as it is, it makes it much tougher. That is fascinating to me. Yes, you can't carry trouble and then stay short of the next trouble. Trouble looms. But that's the nature of the course right now based on the conditions. So here is the piece that you do every time, Dave, which we're always so fascinated by, your trends piece. And here are the criteria. We have the 11 criteria, I believe it is, that you base this on. We have a graphic with it. Look at that. Very
nice.
Look at that. A picture of you, Dave, and everything. Look at that. World ranking, nationality, age, open form, St. Andrews fit, winning form, recent majors form, majors excellence, the Augusta link, current form, and what that golfer did the week before. The floor is yours, sir, however you want to winnow this down for us.
Yeah, so some of those are probably fairly self-explanatory. The interesting one is maybe the Augusta link. I was just, weeks before, I was just thinking, isn't it a bit strange that all Seve's majors and all Faldo's majors were either Opens or Masters? And you think, well, what's the connection between those two? Because they seem two very different things. But the more I've read about it, the more it seems they are very, very linked. I think creativity on both is a massive thing. I've read quite a bit about the course design, that when Mackenzie and Bobby Jones designed Augusta, they had St. Andrews very much in their mind in terms of the creativity and how you would work your way around. So I think that link seemed to make sense. So then I checked it out further, and then it was incredible the amount of open winners at St. Andrews in particular who had brilliant records at Augusta. You think maybe they're just good players, but it's everybody. So even John Daly had a third at the Masters. I don't remember that happening. So in fact, if you look back, the last 10 St. Andrews winners have all got a top three. Now, obviously, you want this to be a predictive tool, so when did it occur? But nine of them had already had that good Masters top three before playing well at St. Andrews. The only one it was the other way around was Oosthuizen, who won the Open, then went on to finish runner-up at the Masters. But it's a really good, really good link, that one. So I think anyone who's got that strong form there, you think of maybe Spieth as one that jumps out at Augusta, then they are primed to go well at St. Andrews. So do you want the final standings? Should we jump to that?
Yeah, let's do the final standings. You can do the countdown for us. Everybody loves a countdown, Dave.
I do, yeah. So in 10th place, Matt Fitzpatrick, US Open winner. We've got Morikawa in ninth, which is good to see. And as I say, I might bump him up from that in my own sort of betting thoughts near the time. John Rahm, eighth. Sung Jae-im is a bit of a surprise in seventh, but he's played well at Augusta, so that helped his tally. The interesting one, maybe, who you don't think would necessarily appear on a list of top contenders, is Justin Rose. He was sixth, so he was a surprise entering the top 10. Rory McIlroy, yeah, that speaks for itself. There's three players in tied second. Jordan Spieth, yeah, no surprise. Scotty Scheffler, the Masters champion at the moment, no surprise. And Hideki Matsuyama as well. Again, another Augusta winner, so that helped his score. But the winner, by a couple of points, was Xander Schauffele, the man of the moment.
Oh, man. Oh, no. So the reason I react like that, Dave, of course, is because, you know, our golf betting brains, it's difficult enough for us to imagine back-to-back, you know, tournament, random tournaments being won on tour, which obviously Xander just has done, not to disparage the Scottish Open as random. It was obviously a great field. But for him to win back-to-back-to-back with the climax being the Open Championship, whew, that's a tough proposition for a lot of people to put their money behind, isn't it?
Yeah, because I've got this thing. I think I'm wrong on this matter, but I've got this thing that you sort of use up. You use up the wins, but then you can come at it the other way and thinking, if you look at records of people, they come in bursts and flourishes. So say we rewind to the Masters, we could have thought, Scotty Scheffler, he's done all his winning. He can't win another one. Well, he did. So I'm hoping this plays out again with Xander Schauffele. Thinking back, Phil Mickelson won the Scottish Open, then won the Open itself the following week. So it's been done. And when he did win in Scotland, Xander Schauffele, he was on the wrong side of the draw. So it was a better win than perhaps it first seems. So obviously when I wrote my preview, this was before all this winning that he'd done.
Right.
So his price has rather crashed since.
You're like,
so it's a tricky one.
We only have about 90 seconds left. So I want to get your answer to two questions. One, what is your favorite long shot play to win this? And then two, the question that I always love to ask of folks, who's the guy that if he wins this is going to make you hate yourself the most because you thought to bet him, but you just couldn't get there?
Yeah, I think my long shot is Hao Tong Li, because he's got this excellent record in the Alfred Dunhill Links, which he's played at St. Andrews. He's 25 under for his six rounds there. He's finished third in an Open before, shot 63 on the last day at Birkdale in 2017. He won on the DP World Tour a couple of weeks ago, so I think he's a great long shot. And then the one where I would be full of regret and remorse. I think anyone would be if they don't back Rory this week.
And there it is.
If you look at the price and you think, not for me, and then he wins, you will feel terrible without a shadow of a doubt. So it might be just worth having something on him to take that out of the equation, because he's got a big chance, hasn't he?
My producer, Jeff Parles, gave a big smiling nod when you said Lee as the long shot. You like that?
I mean, he won on the European Tour not that long ago. He's after having a real tough go of it, he's actually played much better and, as Dave said, has had success in this tournament.
Well, Dave, can't thank you enough. I know you'll enjoy it. We'll be the ones to be watching this in the dead of our sleep this time around, as obviously the Open Championships always are with the time zone difference. But we appreciate you making the time zone effort as well. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on, and enjoy the week.
You too. Dave Tindall at Dave Tindall Golf. You could see all his stuff at Betfair, and he's on multiple podcasts, which are wildly entertaining. I'm not sure I understand half of the things with the accent, but they are wildly entertaining nonetheless. More football next.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets and risk-free tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards, sports betting's premier loyalty program featuring a exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager on the BetMGM app. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Jeff, it occurs to me that we should probably name once again the long shot golfer that Dave Tindall was referring to, because Dave has the pronounced Leeds accent, which is always very musical to the ear. But even if we were saying the name of the golfer, there might be some people listening who are like, wait, which guy were you talking about? And there's other, and there's multiple people with the last name Lee. He was referring to Hao Tong Li, Haotongli.
Yes.
Hao Tong Li, which I'm looking at 300-1 is what I'm seeing out there.
That is a classic shop around. There's some books that are dishing as low as 150-1. And like you said, as high as 300-1 out there.
The old classic shop around. Ian McDonald checks us. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciated. Ian McDonald. We was talking about our offensive player of the year numbers that we were just referring to. Some tidbits. Some of these are talking about what we were talking about, and then he adds on something. He goes, 26 of 50 winners were running backs, 20 of 50 were quarterbacks, 4 of 50 were wide receivers. As we pointed out, 2 Jerry Rices, 1 Michael Thomas, and 1 Cooper Kupp. But he says of the 20 quarterbacks to win, if this is any bit of helpful advice for Offensive Player of the Year, 9 led the league in passing yards and won the award as listed below. And then he shows a graphic of it. So part of that is if you can figure out who might be, you know, if it's that could correlate with your handicap of who you think is going to finish with the most yards. If you think Justin Herbert, just to give one example, is going to just light it up with the LA Chargers, and remember, besides Tom Brady, Justin Herbert had the most attempts in all the National Football League, passing attempts last year, so volume is really what you're looking for. If you feel he's going to win the passing yards title, if it is, it's not actually a title, but be number one there, maybe he's the bet for offensive player of the year. I like that for me, McDonald.
This award makes no sense, by the way, because
offense and defense, it's so tough.
Offensive more than anything. That correct. Comeback player of the year, the two ones where it really just depends what the voters' moods are.
Comeback's ridiculous.
But I mean, you have some years where the guy who won the MVP wins offensive player of the year, and then
I know
the last 3 years wasn't the MVP. Like Mahomes in 2018 won the MVP, and yeah. This. Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, Adrian Peterson is in his year he almost broke Dickerson's record, won both. It's very random.
It's really random. It's awards in general, right? Whenever we're handicapping the handicappers, or handicapping, I should say, the award voters, we're seeing it with AL MVP this year right now, right? Like if we just segue back to that just as a parenthetical aside. If I said to you right now, Jeff, who do you think is going to be the American League MVP? Let's say the season ended now. It's not a question of who you believe the American League MVP is. You're like, what? You're literally trying to play psychologist, right? And you're like, how are these voters going to think? Like, what percentage of them are just going to do the same thing they did last year and say, look, Otani's just Babe Ruth. No one can compete. He's your MVP. Or, right? What's the percentage that you believe is going to say, you know what? Been there, done that. Sorry, bud. Aaron Judge has 30 ding-dongs, and that's all there is to it. He plays in the pinstripes, and so see you later, Shohei. For me, I have no idea.
I have no clue.
No clue.
Because each market technically gets 2 votes.
Yep.
So I don't want to say, there could be a tie in this market.
Have a tie.
But I don't think it's impossible that it comes down to someone that is trying to make a statement and puts either Judge or Otani in third for no apparent reason, and that's what skews it one way or the other.
Who was that, Joel Sherman, who put out his, and he was like, forget Otani. He's spectacular, but he's not my MVP.
I don't remember who did it, but Jordan's injury kind of eliminates Jordan.
Ooh, it's tough.
Which is really difficult because Jordan was well on the path to being right in this race.
Sure was.
And now it's just Otani and Judge. I mean, just look at the odds. Everything's tightened now.
I genuinely don't know.
I
have my opinion as to what I think is right, but it doesn't matter what I think is right.
I would lean Judge, but I have no clue.
No clue.
I really don't know.
All right, back to football. What do you got here? Season passing touchdown props.
The NFC side today, Gil. The NFC side. All right. Because as we know, we already talked about this on the interception side where
your boy Carson Wentz.
Carson Wentz.
23 and a half, baby.
Out at 10 and a half.
For the interceptions.
For the interceptions. Getting trotted out at 23 and a half today on the passing touchdowns.
Seems about right.
You know, the interesting one that stood out to me, Gil, more than anything, is that I know Aaron Rodgers is dealing with no true number one wide receiver up there in Green Bay. But 31 and a half is a pretty big adjustment off what we've seen over the last few years from the back-to-back MVP. That's the one that stood out to me immediately when going through these.
Yeah, that's a good point. In other words, I have certainly led the brigade of, well, he doesn't have a number one wideout. Let's see how this goes. I mean, I love Aaron Rodgers, but even Aaron Rodgers without, you know, a Devontae, good Lord. I mean, what must he? We don't know what we're going to get. But you're right. Like, if you go down and sort of look at what he's done here in the past, just calling up Aaron Rodgers' stats, last year, 37 touchdowns. The year before, the ridiculous 48 against five picks. But before that, Jeff, 26, 25, 16. So maybe it's not so crazy. Right? 26, 25, 16. Now, of course, the 16 was he didn't play as much. Right?
He was hurt.
He was hurt. Before that, 40, 31, 38, 17. Didn't play as much that year. 39, 45. I don't know. So anyway, there is a stretch there of a 26 and 25 in 2019 and 2018. You're right, though. It's a pretty aggressive adjustment. How about Baker Mayfield, 22 and a half?
That's a really difficult number. That's a really difficult number. By the way, not listed on here, Trey Lance is at 21 and a half. As we talked about on the interception prop, Gil, if you think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be the starter week one, you bet every Trey Lance prop you can under.
Yeah.
Because he just won't get the reps. So that's just out there as well.
When are we going to, literally, so I'm going on 2 weeks vacation. It's basically August when I get back. How many of these things do you think will be resolved? Jimmy Garoppolo, Deshaun Watson. You think they'll still be in the air?
Watson, I think, will be resolved by the time you get back.
I hope so.
I do not think Jimmy Garoppolo will be resolved by the time you get back.
He'll still be out there.
I think he will still be a 49er.
Maybe so. So anyway, just looking at this, I actually like Tom Brady. Tom Brady, 35 and a half. I think you're just betting against injury because he'll dink and dunk so many of those little touchdown passes. I think Justin Fields, 18 and a half, the low mark.
What a gross number there. Just shows what lack of talent he has around him in Chicago.
I don't know where I stand on him.
It's one of those where when you don't have the proper talent around you as a first-round quarterback, it could end up not being your fault that you don't pan out the way you should.
Matthew Stafford, 34 and a half.
Big number, but probably right. I think Rodgers is the best bet here. I think Rodgers over 31.
Rodgers over is the best bet?
That's the one I would look to. The other interesting one is Dan.
You know what? I actually think I like Brady over more than I like Rodgers.
No problem with that.
No.
And if you're looking at it under, the interesting one is the two NFC East guys who are listed back-to-back with each other of Daniel Jones and Jalen Hurts. Because are we certain that Daniel Jones is going to play a whole season with the Giants? Because there's the whole thing that he could stink and he gets benched. So I'm a little bit concerned there. And then Hurts, kind of like with Josh Allen on the AFC side, rushing touchdowns for the quarterback can take away from the passing touchdowns. 22 and a half, though, I would have expected that to come in a little bit higher at 24 and a half. So that number makes it a little bit harder to bet an under on Hurts.
Don't love these, I must say. But Tom Brady with 43 last year, set at 35 and a half. I get it. He's a year older. That's probably the biggest discrepancy of the bunch, with the exception. Yeah, no, that's the biggest discrepancy of the bunch, I think, from last year to this year in terms of an adjustment. You'll have to convince me. I'll have to see it with my own eyes. I would go over on that as my favorite one on the board. But again, is it something I would gravitate towards betting if we had this available here readily in Nevada? I don't think I would rush to the window to bet this right now. That's for sure. We've done all we can do. The Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Ben Wilson in the house.